Welcome to Leadership Reimagined. I'm Dr. Jane Lovis, your host. During each episode of Leadership Reimagined, we take a look at leadership from the vantage point of what it's going to take for leaders to lead their organizations forward into a new future. And in this episode, we're creating that new future. Today, I'd like to welcome Stu Hynek. Stu is a best-selling business author, marketer, and Wall Street Journal cartoonist. His first book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, was named one of the top 64 sales books of all time. His latest, How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed, lays out a complete model for explosive business growth based on the strategies, attributes, and tools weeds use to grow, expand, dominate, and defend their turf. A twice nominated Hall of Fame marketer and NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center author in residence, he was named the father of contact marketing by the AMA, and he lives on a beautiful island in Washington State. Welcome, Stu. I am so thrilled to have you here as my guest because I've read your first book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, and I'm really excited about how to grow your business like weeds.
Oh, excellent. Well, I'm glad to join you.
So tell me, we actually got started a little bit before this on weeds. So we're going to jump right into that because I want to hear more about what you're saying with that, because I think it's so critical right now with this conversation about, are we going into a recession or not? Either way, I'm sure it's going to be important.
Well, I think either way, the weeds have us covered from a strategy standpoint. So we were just talking before we started, and I was saying to you that the weed strategy, or rather, I should say, how to grow your business like a weed, is about a business model or a growth model that has been inspired by, really copied from, the weeds. They have a perfect model, actually. For growth, we see it all over
the time. Yes,
we do. Growing. Exactly. So one of the things that I've noticed thinking about recently is just that, you know, weeds thrive in disrupted ground. Another term for yards or farmland, you know, anything that we disrupt, we notice that they're soon to follow because they have all the mechanisms and more to make that happen. So what I'm saying though is that we're heading into disrupted. We're always in disrupted ground, aren't we?
Right.
Maybe we're coming out of the pandemic. We don't know, but maybe we're going into recession. We can't. Who's going to tell us the truth? I don't know. So certainly we are. I mean, two negative quarters of growth. We're in a recession, and that's here. So here comes the next disruption. And I think that actually weed strategy, that's just that body of knowledge that's come out of this biomimicry experiment with weeds. I think it actually covers us really, really well in times of disruption, or let's say in recessions. I think actually recessions can become a time of great opportunity, actually, by following weed strategy. Yeah, I think it's fascinating stuff. Weeds are just awesome.
So what are some of the disruptions that we can take as leaders to continue to expand and grow?
Well,
weeds grow all the time.
Yeah,
right?
They do. They do. And so I would say the first thing is just that we just need to follow weed strategy, period. And that carries us through good times and, or let's say easier times and tougher times. Yeah, I probably is helpful to explain what the weeds model is, or what's the basis of weed strategy. So, you know, there are weeds all over the world. They come in all shapes and sizes. And it turns out, you know, I'd wondered about this, but it turns out that they have a unified model for growth. And that is, they all leverage a fierce mindset and unfair advantages against collective scale. And they do it according to a process that is well-honed. In their case, it's millions of years old, much older than our processes. Well-honed, yet it's a living process that it changes immediately when the weeds are faced with a challenge, and you know, an existential challenge especially, and it's actually how they evolve around it. And in fact, the really wonderful thing about their process is that it's just programmed into their DNA. It's like a program in a computer. They just run it. It's just the instructions are already there. So they're actually, you can see then why they're so efficient at growing, at taking over our lawns, at taking over our gardens, setting root anywhere. They're just really amazing. So that's the model. And so how do we deal with disruptions? And we just dealt with one. I mean, we're just coming out of one great example, very unusual example, because we're usually not going through pandemics. We're going through recessions. And in the pandemic, things came out differently. During recessions, gyms seem to do really well. I mean, people buy memberships, they pay every month, but they're under contract. A lot of times it's direct deposit or withdrawal, so they don't even have control over paying it. Gyms have it pretty good during recessions. Restaurants too. Restaurants also have it pretty good. I mean, as long as they're not too expensive, I think the high-end restaurants probably do well as also. Certainly people need to keep eating. And so both of those businesses are considered roughly recession-proof, but they sure are not, pandemic-proof, as we've seen. And so we saw really interesting examples of how people had to, or how restaurateurs, for example, had to pivot quickly, or they were going to go out of business. A lot of them did go out of business. They didn't adapt. They're not weeds. They're not total weeds, put it that way. And so they didn't adapt. They didn't adapt, for example, to, let's say, a takeout model instead. And they went away. They perished. Gyms, I can't even say same thing. You can't work. I mean, I didn't want to work out in my gym because I didn't want to be in there breathing heavily with everyone else. And I don't know if the gyms have recovered yet. So I don't know. Does that make sense?
Right. And because I was thinking of some of the disruptors that restaurants, the restaurants that were successful started doing was, one, the willingness to deliver, the willingness to have takeout to a level that they didn't have before. And some of this they got from community governments was they actually were able to sell alcoholic drinks by the glass. They had to have a cover over them. But that was a real turnaround.
Yeah, that's right. And well, I think the restaurants that did best are the ones that already had an email list of their customers. So if they weren't doing that, then how are they going to let anybody know, their patrons know, that they changed anything and that they're meeting needs differently now, or just maybe better, more suited to the times? So if they had email lists, they could say, hey, obviously we can't occupy the dining room, but certainly we can do takeout. And I know you love having our pizza, and I want to invite you to come down. We got a coupon, I don't know, something. But they stimulated a new area of their business. There was one restaurant, I wish I could remember the number, the name, but one restaurant that said, look, we have customers. We know they eat, because either you eat or you die. So we know they eat. We know they're going to be eating at home. They're going to be cooking a lot more. And so they changed their model completely from restaurant to actually restaurant supply. Well, restaurant supply to their customer base. So, because I think a lot of us like to buy restaurant supply stuff instead of, I don't know, to sort of consumer wares in our kitchens. And so I think it was really smart pivot on their part to say, then let's look, they're going to be cooking a lot more. Let's help them do that.
True. So what I'm hearing is paying attention to what the need is.
Yeah, that's part of it. I think actually one of the imperatives, there are two imperatives that weeds give us. And one of them is, if you see a dandelion in your lawn, if it was just one, it wouldn't be much of a factor. But if you look up, you'll see that, well, if there's one in your lawn, there's actually at least dozens, if not hundreds.
Right.
They don't do anything without scale. Everything they do is at scale. And so I think one of the imperatives that they would tell us is that you need to form alliances, or let's say collaborations. And really what you should be doing is collaborating with the smartest people you know as quickly as you can. Now, that's great advice anytime. But it certainly is great advice as any disruption makes its way toward you. Start sharing revenue, but start teaming up with people, and your market will explode, because you're doing things at much greater scale than if you were just trying to do it alone or going it alone. And the other one is to change your scale. So once again, we are talking about growth. So, but to change the way you approach scale. And a lot of us, a lot of us think in terms of, we're kind of trained to think in terms of one-to-one leverage. And I don't know if that, does that make sense? I mean, when we went to kindergarten and we played musical chairs, we were taught very quickly that you have to be competitive, you have to be proactive. And that's the start of being, of becoming self-sufficient. We have to be self-sufficient in order to oddly, to make our way through society and through life in society. And so then we're told, study hard, get good grades, get into a great college, get a great degree or degrees. And finally, you end up landing a great job, but you can't scale a job. You can't have 1,000 jobs, or you can't create the effect of 1,000 jobs with one job. We're sort of blind to the fact that we do a lot of things at one-to-one leverage. So for example, I'm terribly guilty of this. And we might talk about my other book, or one of my other books as well, about getting meetings, about how to get a meeting with anyone. Mm-hmm. But I, as you mentioned, I'm one of the cartoonists from the Wall Street Journal. I use cartoons as devices to get through to people to get meetings. And then I sell agency services and to help sales teams do the same thing, to break through to their top accounts and prospects. So I would say the creative director of my agency. I'm the owner, but I'm really the creative director. So when we have an assignment, I'm writing copy, and I'm designing, and I'm right in the middle. I am the deliverable stream, and that's not good. It's real. That's all one-to-one leverage. I can't scale that. And so I need to find a way to undo that. I shouldn't be in the deliverable stream. And then the other part of it is that when I'm sending devices out to get meetings, I tend to like to send things, physical things. And that's because they stick. Well, if you send something that's fascinating, it sticks around. If you send let's say a fascinating email, it's not going to stick around. Or I don't know, maybe a fascinating outreach on LinkedIn, whatever that is, it's not going to stick around. But if I send you a print of one of my cartoons, it's about you and it's on target, it's likely to stay in your office the rest of your career. So those kinds of things. But I'm really looking for ways to present things to people that they haven't seen before, that they're just saying, oh my God, I love the way you think. And in fact, I have a video that maybe we might take, we might share during the interview, but an executive assistant received one of my cartoon packages and just had the most incredible reaction to it. I loved it because when I send these contact devices out, I'm never there to see what it looks like when they arrive and people react to them. And so she shot 50 seconds of her reaction. It was great. But basically she's saying, my God, I love the way you think. Anyway, does all that make sense, or did I wander off point?
It's a lot of things, but it's hearing is one for anybody, no matter what role you're in, no matter who you are, you can't be the only one doing it.
Yeah.
If you're the CEO, if you're a team leader, and you think you're the smartest person in the room and you've got all the answers, you're limiting what you can do. You need to pull. That's what I've been pulling some weeds this summer. We've been working on our yard. And those, they send roots out, and they send out all of, they're out to take over the world.
Yeah, they have incredible mechanisms to do that.
And we're kind of, on one hand, we're so often, I got to do this by myself, or I got to tell you what to do. And then you can only do it from my frame of reference, as opposed to, here's what we need to do. How can we do it?
Or even, here's our process. Use the process, because process is the way that we accumulate expertise and experience and then map it across the organization. So the process is good.
Yes.
It has to be a living process. There has to be room for innovation and trial and error. And, you know, I'm sorry, earlier I did stray off point, but I was saying that the weeds give us these imperatives, which are to start collaborating with the smartest people you know as quickly as you can. It creates this whole new web of business for you. Mm-hmm. And the other is to get out of the way, root out all forms of one-to-one leverage, get out of the way of the thing growing.
That's great. And then, and so your books actually work together, because build that leverage and create it, you got to be able to connect with people.
Yeah, I mean, the way that there's this really interesting connection to them or contact point between them. Here's the thing about getting meetings. If you can't get meetings, you can't sell. In fact, nothing happens. Nothing happens in life if you can't connect with people. And so if you can get meetings with the people who have the power to change your scale, I call it a superpower or a secret weapon, but what it really is an unfair advantage. And that's part of the weeds model. So again, the weeds model is the weeds leverage a fierce mindset and unfair advantages against collective scale, and they do it according to a process that they've honed. So being able to develop unfair advantages is critical to our success in business. In fact, I would say that if there's a business out there, and there are, trust me, we know there are businesses out there that have no unfair advantages, they're not going to stick around. You need unfair advantages. By unfair advantages, by the way, I mean, that's the way we want our competitors to describe it. Not that it's actually unfair. It's just brilliant, and it's really tough to beat.
Yeah. You're out there. There's almost a sense of this is my favorite word, audaciousness, because you're out there doing big things. Weeds don't hide. They're just out there. No, you know, when the dandelions take over their yard, they have a big party. You have yellow flowers all over your yard.
Might as well enjoy them. That's true. No, they're not hiding at all.
No.
They're very confident in their process, and they just run it. And it's funny, because when I first started doing interviews, the book launched in June. So when I first started doing interviews, the interviewers didn't quite know what to make of the book. Like, is he serious? I don't know. And they'd ask things like, so Stu, are we talking about this kind of weed? And no, we're not. We're talking, you mean the weeds, the pests in my garden? Yes. And why do you think they're a pest? What is it about them that is troubling you? Because really, I know what it is. You're trying to control them and you can't.
Yeah.
You know, so what you really ought to do is kneel down and take a close look at what they're doing, because there's so much wisdom in what they're doing. Why not? They've been at it for, I mean, I think weeds have been around, let's see, the fossil record says flowering plants showed up on the planet 145 million years ago. I'm sure some of those were weeds.
I'm sure. Right?
Yeah. They've been at it for a long time. They've got a perfected process and structure to all this that really makes sense to observe and learn and use.
Bringing it back to leadership, oftentimes I have experienced myself and with others, is leadership sometimes looks like it's being done in a vacuum. Like there's somebody over here doing leadership. And when leadership can be like that weed and attract everybody and pull, you know, I use the word enroll everybody in what they're out to create, but really that get everybody and don't be bashful. Weeds are not bashful. You know, just out there going, come on. And those dandelions spread their seeds, their ideas all over the place.
Well, I think, you know, one of the words that comes up a lot is collaboration. And that's what weeds do. They don't work alone. I mentioned weed mindset. Maybe we should clear that up. No, I'm not talking about a bunch of guys sitting around going, oh, wow, man.
Yeah.
Right? That's not the weed. That's not the weed mindset.
Right.
That's not the one we're talking about anyway. Weeds are, if you look at them, if you watch what they're doing, you have a garden, so you know. I mean, anybody with a garden, anybody who has any land around them knows that they're persistent. They don't go away. They don't stop. They just keep going.
They're aggressive.
They're tenacious is another good word. They're aggressive and urgent, and they're adaptive and resilient. And here's one that I think will surprise people. They're actually optimistic. I got to come back to that, but I think they're optimistic just by their actions. They're optimistic. I guess another big, huge part of this, maybe half of their mindset, is they're collaborators. And they know that if there was just one dandelion in your lawn, it wouldn't be much of a factor. You just pull it out, you're done. But when there's hundreds of them out there and they're producing, well, it's sort of an average, I think it's an average of about 15,000 seeds per plant over a 5 to 10 year lifespan, they are not going away. They are a force to be reckoned with. You can't beat them. Similarly, we need to develop that same instinct ourselves. It's not an instinct that comes naturally to us, but certainly that instinct of collaboration, which is why, as I said, way too long answer earlier, that weeds are telling us you need to collaborate with the smartest people you know as fast as you can. Now that's told from the standpoint of a business owner, or maybe a solopreneur or something like that. It's also true within organizations, mm-hmm. to your point. You know, if we're all working against each other, we're all just working independently and not with each other and not collaborating. We're not a team and we're not powerful that way. But when we are working together as a team, when we're collaborating, it's just a force to be reckoned with, and it's unbeatable.
Oftentimes you'll have individual teams that work well together. But teams as teams together don't work well. So everybody's going off on their own, doing their own thing. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not done with collaboration. So there's no sharing. Yeah. Because maybe what this team is doing over here can support, has some ideas that would benefit another team.
Yeah.
That would make their work easier and more expansive and allow them to move faster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is like that. And you were saying if there were a bunch of teams all doing their own thing, but maybe they're doing it really well, if it's not focused on the same, going the same direction, it isn't good. It's just entropy, you know?
Yeah.
It's just random movement or motion. And it's not productive. So, but if you're working as a team, if you're working toward a goal, or I think one of the best examples of this is that if you have an internal movement, if you are movement that everyone is just focused on and excited about, then that creates that kind of cohesion that I think we're saying we want. Maybe one example of that could be, I don't work at SpaceX, but I have to imagine, I'm a fan of SpaceX, and when I'm watching what they're doing, I'm just saying, wow. I mean, when they developed the Falcon booster system, and we can all, I think, still recall back to, I don't know, what was it, 2017? But when they were firing these things up and they weren't, they were trying something new. They wanted to land propulsively. It hadn't been done before, and except in Buck Rogers,
right.
You know. But so they went up and they came back down and they were trying to stick the landing, but wouldn't. And they kept exploding, and one of them exploded on the pad before it even took off. And there was a lot of failure. Their approach is to try, fail, and then suddenly try and succeed. And then suddenly they're doing something no one else can do. And when they started sticking the landings, it suddenly became routine. Of mm-hmm. course they do. Now they're using boosters. I think the record is 11 times. That's never been done. And that reduces the cost of going into space. So now they're working on the Starship that they've been halted by FAA. Delays, but they're developing that big spacecraft that will go up and it'll land propulsively here or on the moon or Mars. They're working toward making humanity a multi-planetary species. They'll probably get people to Mars before any government does. That's an incredible place to work. Mm-hmm. we're making the species multi-planetary. What a cool movement to be part of. It doesn't have to be quite so grand. Certainly, if there's a movement, if there's something that everyone is saying, this is fantastic. I mean, I'm just so pleased to be part. I'm so proud to be part of this. This is terrific. Maybe that fosters more collaboration, but we certainly need to foster that collaboration. That's exactly how weeds do it.
And I remember doing some studying on Dyson, manufacturer of that vacuum cleaner, which kind of that was in miniature. There was a vision. It was, we are going to perfect this and make the most powerful, lightweight, easy to use vacuum cleaner.
And they made it almost entertainment because it's, you know, it's clear, you can see it working, and it's almost like, hey, can I vacuum today?
Consumers got enrolled in it too. As you say, it was that focus that they brought to everything they were doing and the energy of, this is what we're out to create. You know, I don't know how long it took them. It took them a while, but once they got it out, you know, the company became an evangelist for the product too. Everybody. So it's back to that, having everyone enrolled and energized and engaged in what you're up to. And that's, for a lot of companies right now, that's a real problem.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to work and doing their job and going home. And as long as they do an okay, they're not excited.
Yeah. This is the opposite of quiet quitting and I don't know what else. I mean, just apathy. And
yeah,
this is, you know, you can't wait to get to work. You can't wait for Monday to come when it's the weekend. Maybe it just, you know, you just love what you're doing. You love what you're contributing out there in the world. Can you imagine if it was like that wherever you worked? That would be amazing.
Yes, absolutely. I want to go back to your other book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, because that's really critical in sales. And it's also in this kind of this new paradigm we're looking, it's critical in building relationships and expanding who your, you know, your communities.
Yeah, it is. It's just absolutely critical. You know, you know what I would love to do is, could I share the video with you?
Well, the challenge is we only use the recording.
So I'm just going to set this up real quickly. I sent a cartoon contact device to someone named Billie Jean, who is an Instagram marketing influencer. His assistant, the people that we often call gatekeepers, but his assistant saw what was in the box, wooden box you can see here, and thought, this looks interesting. I think I should film an unboxing of this. And so I wanted to share her reaction.
I usually wait till you get here, Bill, to show your packages, but this one's pretty cool and I'm too anxious to wait and show you. So here's the reveal. If I can get the cap off. Read how awesome this is. The tale of the hired gun. I ever tell you, fellas, the story of the Billy Kid? Yep, sure did. How about Wild Bill Jean? You mean the marketing whiz from San Diego? At least 100 times before. Yep, you can say that again. Look at the back. I'm kind of in love with this guy. Mad respect.
That was Billy's executive assistant, the ones who usually are saying, no, he's not in. No, you can't talk to her. It was, I love calling whoever I'm sending these to. In this case, it was Billie Jean, but I love calling him Wild Billie Jean. And but it's just a lot of fun. Now that piece, you know, that piece is not going to get thrown away. It's not going to get filed away. It's nothing like sending an email or a certainly not like sending a pitch on LinkedIn. It's well appreciated. And when you do that, I mean, the thing that, well, you know, what was happening there when the assistant is saying, I'm kind of falling in love with this guy, mad respect. She's, I think really the translation is, I love the way you think.
Yeah.
And if you can cause that reaction in people that you don't know yet, but you know that they're, you know, they're one of your top prospects. If they became your client, they'd be a dream client. If they became your partner, they'd become a dream partner, et cetera. If you can do that, if you can elicit that response to the people who can change everything about the scale of your business or your life, your career, then that's a superpower. I mean, it certainly is an unfair advantage, and the weeds would definitely approve.
Yep. Yeah. So I have a question because I read your book and I've thought about this same thing for me, and I'm a business consultant and, executive leadership coach. So I do now have something to do that I think is unique enough, and it's taken me a while to get there. But if you're like a software developer or the CEO of a soft IT company, you're a cartoonist. You can create that cartoon and send it. And people are going to go, oh my God, a personalized cartoon from Stu. That's so amazing. I'm going to send you some cables?
Well, I mean, I got to say, because I think your question is, do you have to be a cartoonist to do this? No, you don't.
Yeah.
I happen to be a cartoonist, and that's one of my unfair advantages with we're kind of mixing weed strategy and contact marketing here. But since that's one of my unfair advantages, when my cartoons appear in the Wall Street Journal, they appear in front of 2.1 million readers. That's an unfair advantage. It's a terrific unfair advantage. When I call an assistant, let's say a CEO's assistant, or when one of my clients' sales team members calls and says, "Hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm sending a print of a cartoon by one of the Wall Street Journal cartoonists, and it's about your boss." The assistants are usually saying, "What? Really?" So that's an unfair advantage. That's what I use that. I use my unfair advantage, but I'm not suggesting that you have to use cartoons. And you know, because you read How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, my other book, that there are all kinds of ways to do this, all kinds of approaches, all kinds of really just amazing, audacious, clever methods for breaking through. And most of them have nothing to do with cartoons. So there's hope, right?
Right. Yeah, I do remember somebody who did design, clothing design, and sent like an outfit or something like that, you know.
I'll tell you, one of my favorites was when, if we have time, we have time for a little story? There was a sales rep, and he was calling on I'm restricted from naming the company or the CEO. But if you saw the movie Forrest Gump, mm-hmm. and you remember that reference to a certain fruit company, that's who I'm talking about. So he was calling on this fruit company's engineering department. Already sounds odd, but anyway, he was calling on the engineering department with the software solution, and the engineers loved his solution. So they said, "Okay, great. Well, the next step is you got to go talk to purchasing." Well, purchasing wouldn't talk to him. So he thought, okay, I know, I'm going to go around you. I'm going to go straight to the CEO because this is too important. And we're talking about one of the most famous CEOs in the world at the time. So obviously that's not going to happen very easily.
Right.
So he tried everything he could think of. He sent faxes, left messages, I don't know, emails, sent letters, whatever. Nothing worked. So finally one day, this plywood box with air holes drilled into it shows up at the front counter with a handwritten note. And handwritten notes actually seem to show up a lot. And if you're sending a physical device, it's not about just sending physical devices. There's a lot of things we can do with digital marketing as well, or digital tech, just digital uses as well. But anyway, when you're sending a physical device, a handwritten note often shows up as being very, very effective. And so the note said, just, you know, I called on your engineering department. They love my solution. They said, talk to purchasing. They wouldn't talk to me. And I've been trying everything I can think of to reach you. Nothing has worked. So this is my final attempt to reach you. So if you wouldn't mind, just open the box. And inside the box is a pigeon. And on the pigeon's leg is a little capsule. And inside the capsule is a little slip of paper. And if you'll take that slip out and write the name of your favorite restaurant, a date and a time, and then put it back in the capsule and release the pigeon, I'll meet you there. And it worked. The pigeon came back, they met for lunch, and he walked out with a $250,000 deal. So, and there were no cartoons involved. It was just absolute audacity and cleverness. And I just love stories like that.
Yeah. And I think oftentimes here's going back to what we were talking about earlier, doing things in collaboration. So share what you're trying to do with somebody and get some ideas, because so often we get stop ourselves.
This is too crazy, or this is too audacious, perhaps.
Or I can't think of anything. This is too boring. And it's like, talk with somebody else and say, okay, what ideas? Let's start throwing out, because when you throw out some ideas, it builds on it.
Yeah. And I guess I would be remiss not to mention that I mentioned that I run an agency. Well, we help clients use cartoons on their behalf to help them get sales meetings. So
they can reach out to you. Wanted
cartoons,
if they,
that's
if
what
they
we
want
do.
A cartoon.
Yeah, that's right.
Great. Well, I think with dog interruptions, now most of our listeners aren't going to hear a lot of this, but with all the challenges we've had today, Stu, this has been a fabulous conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I love the idea of thinking of that, the way weeds proliferate and the things that they do, and how do we as leaders with teams or even our own businesses, how do we begin to think that way. As you said, the optimistic, the determined, the audacious, the tenacious, all of that. How do we keep going and trying it and enrolling and bringing others and connecting with others so that we can do this together?
Yeah, well, and I would say, of course, I would say it, I'm the author, but I would say buy the book and read it.
Yeah, yeah,
you should,
of course.
Because that's where all the, that's where it all is. And then I would say start, I think that, I mean, there's so many things you could say about weeds. They deal with what is, we don't. We get so distracted by side thoughts and emotions and so forth. I thought I deserved that more, better, whatever it is. Deal with what is, stop it. Stop yeah. whining and just deal with what is. Another one is that they never do anything without an unfair advantage, and neither should we. We should be piling those up. We should just have a whole deck of unfair advantages in our businesses, and they never do anything alone. Again, we should be collaborating. They always focus on what makes them win, which is really process. We need to do all of those things. So certainly I would suggest reading How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed, but then also, adapting it. I think it actually is the key to not just thriving in most times, but probably thriving, especially during, dare we say, during the next recession.
Well, and you look at some of the companies that have really thrived during the pivoted and did things 3, 4, 5 times faster than they ever had any thought to, have come out 2 years later a very different company, doing the same work in a very different way.
I think that I hope to redefine the word weed to people. So it's not just this, you know?
Yeah.
And I have to redefine what recessions actually are, because I think they're actually a time, they're certainly a time of great change. And a lot of people don't cope with the change. It scares them and they focus on the fear, but I think they're actually a time of great, great opportunity. I think they're bursts of opportunity.
They're almost like a cleansing time.
Yeah, they are. They clean out all the dead wood.
Thank you so much, Stu. This has been so fabulous.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us this week on Leadership Reimagined. I encourage you to take something that you heard today and apply it in your business. The key to progress is action and sharing. I'd love to hear what you accomplish. Email me at jlovis@lovisconsulting.com and let me know. Speaking of applying it in your business, if you're struggling or looking to expand your leadership skills, let's talk. You can go to lovisconsulting.com. That's L-O-V as in Victor, A-S, consulting.com, and schedule a quick call with me. We need powerful, strong, compassionate leaders to solve the challenges we are facing today. Please subscribe on your favorite platform and share with your friends and family. Thank you for supporting us as we cause and expand 1 million women leaders in tech by 2030. Have a great week, and I look forward to seeing you next week.